Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. If you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com. If we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced. The jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of yourremediesinthelaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups at Your Remedies in the Law. And Your Remedies in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict predecided topics of discussion. So essentially how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you what are your hot points interested in. This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights, anything that you can think of. But if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of what you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to your remedies in the law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, so winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right, lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at Your Remedy is in the Law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if we can disclose properly and then answer properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, thank you so very, very much for that disclaimer. We appreciate you. Sincerely, we do. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about something. Brother John is here to talk about something that is often, sadly, overlooked to both the chagrin and detriment of your case. And that is keeping good records of everything, even the minor stuff. You'd be shocked how important it is to resurrect something that you thought was innocuous in the beginning, but proves to be so fatal to their cause, the opposing counsel's cause, years later. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn this call over to this evening to Brother John. Go ahead, buddy.
Well, thank you for that very kind and gracious introduction, both Martin and Michael. Thank you both. Michael's point about, and I'll call it just paperwork for the moment, can sometimes be so, shockingly much stronger than he's made it tonight that, it would almost curl your teeth. To that end, have everything from a court case, like whether it's a simple traffic infraction or something that's a little more serious, like an engagement with the California Franchise Tax Board or the New York State Port Authority or the IRS. These things, even when you make a phone call or you receive a phone call, documenting that call came in, when it came in, and who you spoke with. And I like to put down the amount of time that I spent on the phone with them. Documenting that is of critically prime importance. It's unbelievably important. There are certain cases where individuals, the justice was swayed by the attention to detail or the apparent inattention to detail, shall we say, that certain individuals might make. And what happens is that a lot of times what you do to impress that judge, sometimes it's what you did to impress the judge that makes more difference than sometimes the facts of the case or the merits or, you know, the way the case is presented. Credibility cash comes from when you present yourself to be one sort of person and you stick to it. If you're wishy-washy, you change your mind, you know, you come up with arguments that continually are considered potentially frivolous, those type of defenses and offenses, and yes, I did say offense, are very, very important. It's very important that you look like somebody credible. Therefore, in your pleadings and how you present yourself is of critically prime importance. When a justice has a case before him, and the person says, somebody says, well, they screwed me over. That is so concise and so candid and succinct. It tells them exactly everything about what happened. But when a person says, on this date at such and such a time, this occurred, on this date I had this phone call, on this date I talked with this person, on this date I was at the police department, or at this date I was down at the Treasury Department, and on that date I was at the IRS Carson office in Southern California, and I spoke with these three people, and have currently a meeting scheduled with that person. When you have all that paperwork and everything that you did documented like that, there are about one out of three or one out of four occupants of the bench that will take only so much of that, and they get annoyed. The other three out of the four will sit up and pay attention, because your credibility cash just went up. Your stock, and the value of your integrity and what you say, you're now starting to turn into an E.F. Hutton, because they know, just by the way you kept the facts, that you are somebody of note to consider and to worry about. We currently have one student. In fact, I was working on this student today, their case, and it's a Treasury Department case. It's an IRS case, and they had some documentation that they didn't know, they didn't remember that they had. And I had half of that documentation. They had the other half. And what happened was, we found out today that together we had the whole documentation. And we put a huge nugget of gold into the pleadings. I won't withhold. The brief in support of the motion, and the motion together over 200 pages. The motion, and this one, we're seeking a motion for temporary injunction and permanent restraining order. And to get that, you have to have a pattern of behavior, against an individual, however it is, whether it's, the person's dog down the block, or a guy at work regularly goes out and scratches your key tests your paint job on your car, or whether it's you're getting threats from the Treasury Department or the IRS, documenting each and every one of those is of critically prime importance. Today, at the end of a very arduous couple week long effort to finish up this preparation and presentation of this motion for temporary injunction, permanent restraining order, and a brief in support of that, finding out that this individual had certain documentation uniquely tucked away, and this gentleman, when he and his wife get fan mail from the Treasury Department, he not only scans it in immediately, the first thing he scans is the envelope, and then he scans the cover letter, and then all the rest. He commits his due diligence. My expectations for this one that we're being able to file for him are extremely high. Out of all the times and all the paperwork that I've filed over the years for people, helped people file, and taught them how to file for themselves, this one particular gentleman, his record keeping, just in the fan mail that he gets was just such an unbelievable breath of fresh air that individuals that I've seen that have done similar records keeping, not quite to the quality and caliber that this gentleman did, but I've seen them be very successful. I've watched even prosecutors and DAGs and Treasury Department individuals all of a sudden sit up and take note. And most of them, you'll find out that when they walk into, you know, the court, they consider this almost like a chess game or a battle of stratego or, you know, like a board game. They go in there and it's a battle. It's a contest. And they're trying to see who wins. Well, that's not saying much for an individual when they go into a situation like that. And they consider taking down an individual and getting a conviction, a kill to stamp on the side of their airplane. And that, you know, like in World War II, some of those kills, those stamps on the side of the airplane, that airman got an extra $100 to $500 for that stamp that they put on the side of that airplane. And the bomber crews, when they got back and they were able to tape another bomber sticker or have another bomb painted on the side of their aircraft below the aircraft name near the cockpit, those guys each got an extra $50 or $100 into their pay envelope. And just the same way, these prosecutors consider that when they're hired to do a job, if they go to the place where they technically want to take on a job to prosecute you, that means they've decided that they can win in advance. And if they don't win, that's not just an attaboy that's not in their paycheck envelope. It's an embarrassment, and it's something that their ego has to deal with. Now, I used to think that the typical macho American male with an ego four-lane freeway was the worst and most brutal animal in the field to possibly contend with. But some women prosecutors have an ego that's so bad it's a monster of such awful mean that just to be hated needs to be seen. And to that end, they make up with it for a noted amount of femininity with viciousness and unkindness. And then when that ego goes farther, they tend to sometimes stretch the truth. If you've got documentation on exactly what transpired, the day of the phone call, how long it was, he says, look, I spent hours on the phone with this guy, and this lady was, this was a property tax issue here in the Texas area, and she was in court last week, and I wasn't actually able to be physically in court, even though the judge ordered me to be in court. I was having problems follow up with some back surgery, but for 20 minutes, he allowed me to appear on a Zoom, something like Zoom. It's Microsoft Meetings. And while I was listening to her on her property tax thing, and this prosecutor was ranting and raving that she had spent more than 3 hours on the phone, I just happened to have access to Penelope's phone records, and we showed that it was 23 minutes after the prosecutor said it was over 3 hours. And after the fourth time we corrected the prosecutor, the judge didn't even get to the place where Penelope was ready to present her case. I probably shouldn't use her name. We'll just call her Mrs. P. But the judge says, you know what? I'm just going to summarily dismiss this case and rule in favor of Mrs. P here. There's too many inequities right now. It looks like, I'm guessing, the state probably picked up a case from somebody else, and she hasn't really had a chance to go over it. And right now, we've potentially besmirched the character of Mrs. P more than we should. He says, I'm just going to move. And the camera, I did not pick up the prosecutor, but it did pick up the judge. And we heard the prosecutor go, ah, but, and the judge picked up his gavel by the hammer and pointed the handle at the prosecutor and says, I'm certain that you would agree that it's in the state's best interest to dismiss this case. And what happened was that Penelope had, Mrs. P, had amazingly excellent records. She, there were three of the four times I brought it up that there was an error, and I put it on the screen, you know, so everybody could see it. You know, I did the screen show thing. And, this is a widows and orphans event. Her husband was killed, 8 years ago, in a tractor plowing accident. It was cold outside and they were, all wrapped up for warm weather, you know, for cold weather to stay warm. And the cleft of his jacket got caught in the grain auger and pulled him into it. The largest piece was just a portion of the hip pelvis bone and his right leg. That was left of him. But in a matter of 2 or 3 seconds, he was dead. But, she's in the process of working and surviving, trying to save the farm, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the, here they have things called ag exemptions, and you get an exemption for if you're harvesting, like hay off the property, and, you know, if you're grazing cattle on the property, you get a different kind of exemption. But they're all those are agricultural exemptions. Well, Mrs. P had documented every single time she talked to anybody, and she kept notes almost like a stenographer. And she, she was a cookie mom all of her life, an honorable, most highly honorable wife and mother of 11 children, and grandmother of 43. And in spite of the fact that her protector provided the lift of her head was taken, that precious 5'1½, brown hair, brown eyes, 91-pound sweetie, is out there taking on the county. And all of her children are long grown up, and she's got actually I don't know how many great-grandchildren. But the takeaway is that in the court, every little note that she made, every jot and tittle made a big difference in that judge's mind, to the point where he did not even end up having her proceed with her side of the case. The judge stopped the prosecutor and ruled in her favor. Okay? That's extremely important. That makes a tremendous statement. I'm going to grab sip something. My throat's dry. Hang on. When you're getting stopped and pulled over for a traffic infraction, and especially if it potentially has the threat of developing into something greater, the first chance you get, some people don't wait till they get home. They pull over and they'll take out the phone. And when they were getting pulled over, if they quietly, while they were still coming to a stop, didn't pull and have everybody in the car quietly pull their phone out and press the record button and then slip it back in their shirt pocket with the screen facing their body so that the light doesn't attract the officer's attention. But if they didn't do that, pulling over and writing down or getting your phone out and dictating a short narrative of what happened and then later transcribing that onto paper is very, very helpful and very important. The thing is that when you convert that to affidavit form and have it notarized, that's testimony and evidence on the record. And if you say something that the officer contradicts, Well, theoretically, an officer is supposed to be trained and have good character, good moral character, and so the courts have a bias toward somebody that's experienced at testifying to events and records and things that occurred. But if you come out and you say, well, Your Honor, I pulled over and I dictated it to my little PRD, my personal recording device here, and I transcribed it, and here's what actually happened, and here's a written affidavit that's sworn and executed, notarized here, that I would like to submit. Here's I have two originals, one for me, one for the court, and I have copies for the prosecution. That's testimony and evidence in the record, and when it comes to that kind of paperwork, there was a lady that before the property tax hearing, and the tax commissioner, and they normally don't let an individual coming in for a tax commissioner hearing have individuals other than an attorney with them. But what happened was is that the chief commissioner in this hearing, and it's a board of three, says, well, I'm sorry, we're going to rule against you, and we're taking your homestead exemption away from you. And her husband was a vet, and they had all the et cetera, et cetera. And in Texas, if you're a veteran or the widow or widower of a veteran, you don't pay property tax after 65. If you're both veterans, you don't pay property tax, period. But what happened was is that I asked the commissioner, he says, I'm sorry, you can't talk. I says, you probably want me to talk. And he says, what do you mean? He says, well, I'm going to speak amicus curiae. He says, I've heard that before. What does that mean? I says, friend of the court. He says, no, I'm not going to, as a absolutely ruling against it. I says, you really do want to hear me out. And he says, okay, but you get one chance, and then I'm calling the bailiff. I says, did you notice that her affidavit is recorded with a file stamp clerk's copy down at the clerk's office for real property records, and states what it is, and that this is testimony and evidence that is she entered into the record, and that the clerk here, that what she was stating is hearsay evidence. She is not sworn, you're going to rule in opposite of testimony and evidence that's entered into the record. Do you realize that under Texas statute, and I quoted the Texas statute, that you are not protected as a volunteer or a commissioner, and that she can sue you personally for that damage? He says, first of all, you know, he used full of shaving cream, and he says, second of all, you don't know what you're talking about. And I turned my laptop around to him, and it had the statute on there about what he says, I'm completely immune, I have judicial immunity, you know, and it says, and he looked at it, and he said, holy shaving cream. And he said, could you guys step out for just a moment? And, you know, and we turned around, and I rolled my wheelchair out, and wasn't one whole minute, and they brought us back in there and says, all of her exemptions are granted retroactive, and we're going to file, and we've agreed to file a petition to have her reimbursed for credit for future year's taxes. I says, she doesn't pay tax. He says, well, we're going to, and he was stuttering, he says, we're going to get her reimbursed, and we're going to file. I've got the paperwork right here, and it was already partially filled out, and we've already got two of the three signatures. And it was that quick. But doing the paperwork is incredibly important. By the way, if you take your notes and just your thoughts on a situation that just transpired, then you document it, you know, you write it out in affidavit form. I John Q. somebody that just happened by being of sound mind and body and over the age of 18 and not a resident of Miller County and not otherwise disqualified from testifying, do state and swear and apply to the following. And you just, and then you fill in everything, you know, at 10 after 2, et cetera, finish your documentation to the place where what happens is that when you have that notarized, sworn and notarized, that is testimony and evidence that appears on the record. I used to work as a election judge and precinct chair here in Harris County, Texas, where I live, and for over 30 years I was an election judge or precinct chair. And when I wasn't the precinct chair or the election judge, I worked as what is called a poll watcher. And for those of you who are not familiar with Texas law, the poll watcher, that's kind of the fuzz. They're the guys that have the county prosecutor. I had back then, I used to keep Vince Ryan on, he's a county prosecutor here in Texas on the on my speed dial, and making notes and jotting down everything on a normal election day, November election, a special and general election, I would sometimes have between 20 and 40 pages of notes that I would turn into multiple affidavits. And during some prosecutions that occurred after the last, the 2020 special and general elections, 8 of those notes that had been converted to affidavits for testimony and evidence were used in 5 separate prosecutions for election fraud. And that, you know, I think you're all aware that some of the fraud that occurred under the previous voting systems and et cetera, and complaints. However, what happened was that 2 precincts, based on those prosecutions, were overturned in the Texas Gulf Coast area because of people like me. Neither of those precincts was I directly involved in, but when we did the election judge and poll watcher training, I was there with a gentleman who passed away about 7 months ago, but Alan did the training online, and he also did it in person, and we shared about taking notes and documenting what you see and what's happening, and other individuals use that to the benefit of the Texas state and the people of the state of Texas, to get corrupt judges and election officials off the rolls for acceptable employees. Something that's very important is that when you take your notes, if it's an event that occurs out in the open, and you can, if it's just like there was a car accident, okay, on or about this time, documenting it so that it's as close as possible to what actually transpired. It's very, very important. The student that has the Treasury Department issue, I'm looking at his memorandum in support of motion for temporary injunction permit restraining order right now, and there are a total of 61 pages of documentation that is all his brief, and his pleadings are over 200 pages long. But what's happening is that over 61 pages that I can count just looking at what I looked at right now, tabulating the rows and the titles of each of the documents and their page length, is documentation just like what we've just described. And to that end, this gentleman, we'll call him Mr. R, is potentially in line to get one of those kind letters from the IRS or the or an order from the judge that says, we agree, you're not required to file a 1040. And we have quite a few students that are doing that right now. And to those students that are doing that right now, I regularly call them up and I ask them, are you keeping records? Did you get any fan mail in the last week or two, you know, this week or last week since we last talked? We cover these things so that the documentation is what seals the deal. When it comes to the fact that they have overlooked their documentation and they do so much, and yours is picture perfect, even when the judge is one of these people, and there's a couple that back in from 2015, the reason I remember that is that we finished helping them file just right before our residence caught fire, and it was good because I sent everything off 3 nights before the fire happened, and I had to send it in the mail, and luckily they had it all. Had I waited another week, it would have been a problem. But they finally finished up 3 weeks ago, and their documentation, when they were getting fan mail from the Internal Revenue Service, etc., was what helped carry it across the finish line. Very, very important. Any of you who decide that you would like or like to consider possibly getting off the tax rolls, or you have already individuals that, you know, you've been getting some fan mail, please talk to Michael. One thing that is very, very important is that if you've been a good taxpayer and quote unquote what somebody would consider a good boy or good girl, and you've been paying your taxes and you're on spot on time, there is a path, an appropriate way to begin to inquire without putting yourself and or your family, etc., in harm's way. You can make inquiries to the Treasury Department about your status. And once again, I just used that word status. Something that there's a portion of this that when you get to a certain point, if you have corrected your status in their computers and you have the documentation, that there's a that's a hold card that we use when we're removing somebody from the 1040 system. But if you're one of those people that, whether you've got fan mail coming in on a weekly basis, or you know you've been a good boy or girl, right now I'm working with three people that have never ever ever got an adverse piece of fan mail. All of them, all three of them are children of individuals that we've already gotten a letter from either the IRS or the an order from the judge saying they're not required to file a 1040. In a couple of these cases, we've actually gotten a court order, an agreed-to court order, that the Treasury Department did not want us to go in and finish the case and get a judgment against them. That would be the most devastating, damaging thing that could occur, because they may not be able to collect anything from anybody else ever again, especially American nationals. But they agreed to as an out-of-court settlement with a blessing of an agreed-to order that allows those these two couples and their children, their children's children to perpetuity, and the spouses and Marians to all be exempt from ever having to file a 1040. Okay? There are some of the children that of some of these individuals that we didn't get that that type of a judgment or an agreement. And the thing is that while you're finishing up the case, you sometimes have challenges that dictate other types of remedies at law. It's we're hoping that someday we'll have enough of these individuals that we've documented this to that we'll have a large enough pile that we can start getting groups regularly without doing it one at a time, like whole families removed from the 1040 system. But there's a caveat. Every single drop of communication that you do helps seal the deal. And if you're somebody that is not good at keeping records, you don't like to, or you don't have a scanner, meaning that when the fan mail from the Internal Revenue Service comes, you can't, you know, if you're not somebody that can put it on the scanner and scan it into electronic documents and keep a backup SD chip or SSD solid state drive or whatever, you know, so that you don't lose this. You know, if you're not one of those people, then please don't consider trying to do that. But if you are one of those people, or you were one of the former that we just talked about that don't keep records, and you're willing to learn how to keep records, and you're willing to do it, I was about to use the term religiously, but with complete implicit due diligence. If you're somebody that can do that, then you too can participate in that type of program. Keeping good records is extremely prime importance. There's I've in the last couple of weeks I've had a handful of people identify about what they're doing and where they're going, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I had some other priorities with some individuals, and I've had a little bit of an ease up on that at the moment. So I've been working Treasury the last week or two, couple of weeks. The big difference is that the individuals that keep the good records were able to help much, much better. Now, if you're in trouble and you're getting that unconscionable fan mail, and or especially maybe you've even hired a tax attorney. My father was a licensed bar U.S. Tax attorney. He had my father and I took the bar less than 6 years apart. I had a leg up. I had a father that was already very, spoke the language, knew the lingo, during tax season. He took home an extra nickel or even a shiny dime. That was the way he equalized the rest of the year when he was raising, five daughters. Oh, I also had four brothers, so that's five boys and five girls. There were 10 children. But the thing is that the folks that didn't have documentation, paperwork, that's the term problematic, doesn't even begin to apply. Those people sometimes, even though they were in the absolute right, without equivocation, it was very, very hard to get them through court and to be successful without the documentation. Sometimes there were people that just because they documented everything, you could put together enough of the documentation, and even if there were some areas where there was some, shall we say, fudge factor, the judge still ruled in their favor. You know, and so those are things, you know, and now judges are different than tax commissioners, okay? One thing you need to realize that if they're coming after you, they've already got you in tax court, and they're already coming down your neck. Like this one student, we have one student that's filing in the morning a 42 U.S.C. 1983 complaint against the Treasury Department, the IRS, and he'll be running over to the FedEx Kinko's in the morning first thing, and then over to the U.S. District Court, and he's got a civil cover sheet already done. He filled it. He and I worked on it this afternoon together online, and he's got his nickels already prepared to pay the $514 for the filing fees, the $10 jury fee he's got, and the $260 for the federal marshal to serve the IRS there. And there's, you know, by the time he gets done, including tax, title, license, dealer prep, and destination charges, he's going to have about $1,000 in it, and that's going to include about a $200 Kinko's printing bill, because, as I said, the whole package, and I always recommend that you print 5 copies. The whole package is over 200 pages long, and those of you who are familiar know that these, you know, a ream of paper only has 250 in there. If you got 5 copies, that's 5, you know, that's 4.5 or almost 5 reams of paper. These are not going to be small packages. And what you do is you, when you're doing your paperwork, you take it down to the clerk's office and at the U.S. District Court, and you have 5 copies. If you go to the recorder of deeds or the hall of records or the county clerk, any one of them, and you're filing something, you take 5 originals, signed originals, and get them all file stamped. So that the one you submit one to them, and they, especially if it's like the Hall of Records or Recorder of Deeds, etc., they'll take that one copy and file stamp it, and after they process it and it's recorded, and they'll mail it back to you. But if you're going to the U.S. District Court to file a court case there, they're going to need one copy for the court. You're going to have one file stamp copy to serve the other party with, and you're going to need one to keep with you, and I always keep 2 spares for just such an emergency that you would not believe the varieties of reasons why somebody's needed an extra copy. One time I was in court, and the judge, it had been on the computer. The clerk discarded the original. They had a server crash, and 2 days earlier, and this is one of the files that was missing. Having 2 copies, one that we loaned to the prosecutor and one that we gave to the judge, those 2 copies, are you kidding? I kid you not. It was a miracle, and this goes back into due diligence with paperwork, okay? But when I say get file stamped on, there's something on the top of every pleading. It's called the style, and that's what has, you know, the parties. On the top, there's usually the court that it's in, whether it's a Clackamas County Courthouse for Desperation Nowhere, Population 3, and that includes an armadillo, or a U.S. District Court for San Diego Southern Division. But it's got the court on top, and then on the left side, it'll have the plaintiff and the defendant, or the plaintiff and the respondent, and then on the right hand side it'll have the cause number and the judge's name, usually, and the specific division of that court that they may be in. And sometimes you put the title. In certain jurisdictions, they like the title on the right hand side, but usually down below that, there's the title of, like, motion to have the, you know, the cat declawed. you know, and sequestered. You know, your title will be there. And then below that, you'll have the comes now so-and-so, hereinafter known as plaintiff or hereinafter known as defendant, complains of so-and-so, hereinafter known as defendant or hereinafter known as plaintiff, and for the following good and sufficient reasons, we show the court that this motion to have the cat dequad should be granted, you know. And then below that, you know, starts your pleading. But that top portion of your paperwork is called the style. And so what's happening is that every page that has the style on it, the beginning of this motion, or if you're submitting a suggested court order or a proposed order for the judge to sign, you know, that you say on this date so-and-so came for this, and the court grants or denies, you know, you have the fill in the blanks on this date or that date, you know, it's signed by judge, you know, and you have a blank there, and but you have a proposed order. Well, it's going to have a style on it. Every one of those gets a file stamp, okay, so that they knows that it was filed with the court. When you get the when you leave, anytime you file downtown, you always take 5 copies. Before you leave the courthouse, always check on something called PACER, P-A-C-E-R, Public Assets, you know, to the records filing system. Okay, when you file and log on to PACER, you can actually get permission, if you're a party to a case, to begin to file electronically, which means that you don't necessarily have to email or snail mail or send certified mail copies of all of your paperwork, your pleadings, to each and every person that's on the distribution. If it's on PACER, the public access to court electronic records, then what happens is that every person that's on the public access to court electronic records database is automatically served, and it will tell you which ones aren't. And then those are the only ones you have to go get a green slip and do the certified return receipt requested, so that you can document that. By the way, when you're doing paperwork, when you're mailing something to the IRS, always reference, if you've got some fan mail, reference the fan mail, the fan mail form letter number, like CR 523, with the call number such and such, and for taxpayer ending in XXXX-5123, and right, the next line is via certified return receipt requested, and you list the certified return receipt requested number on the court document. Now, right now, I'm including a bunch of those into the exhibits that are on this particular student, and in every one of those, I'm going to that. I've already gone to that number, pulled up the USPS tracking on it, and included that, a screenshot of that page on the end of that document so that they know it was served. And even if they don't have the screenshot, because you put the certified return receipt requested tracking number on there, they can look it up. And up to 5 years, you can get some of that tracking. Some of it is dropping off in 3 years right now. So what I try to do is the moment I have a chance, I try to go there, do the tracking, and print that out, and then attach it to the PDF as another PDF page. And some of these pages, they already have some of these filings and letters. There was a 3-page letter, and we've got a 2 or 3 or 4-page response, and a couple of exhibits, and now we've got the certified return receipt requested. So some of those exhibits are 10, 12, or 14 pages long. If you have that type of documentation, you always put it in as exhibits or attachments in support of a memorandum in support of the motion. Try to keep the motion as short as possible, a couple of pages, and then the memorandum, try to keep it as short as possible, under 10 or 20 pages, under 25 if you could absolutely help it, and then your exhibits. We could go on a lot more on the paperwork issue tonight. The reason I bring this up is that we've got a couple of students that have been doing great paperwork, some of them that don't have any background at all, and we'd like you to start doing, get a background on why it's so important. The paperwork and the conscientiousness of it is extremely valuable to you. With that, my time has come to a close. I want to thank you for the honor and the privilege of allowing me to address all of you. We're going to turn it over to question and answer. If you can remain to the subject matter topic of the evening, that's very helpful, and we appreciate that. If you're not able to, and you decide you have a topic on your heart that really needs that moment of attention, so be it. It's our honor and privilege to entertain whatever topic you have. And with that, back to you, Martin, and back to you, Michael.
Yes, John, thank you so very, very much. Press star 2 on your keypad, please, to raise your hand. Press star 2. The star is just underneath the number 7 on your keypad. For those of you on Freedom's Radio, look to the center right of your monitor. You'll see a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side. Left-click into that and type away your comment or question. Underneath, you'll see a place to put your name, some other requested information, then hit submit. When you hit submit, it pops up on my end, and I will be happy to lend my voice to your comment or your question. So we'll start with Bruce, then go to Jennifer Sue. Go ahead, Bruce.
Well, thanks. I hope everybody's doing well tonight. Brother John, great to hear from you again. I got on the call, my bad, a little bit late, and I heard something, didn't quite catch it, and then the phrase, not required to file 1040. What was that occurrence or what you did or what was it that means we may not be required to file a 1040?
Well, now is that Bruce from Texas?
Yes, Dallas.
One of
David's friends.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Bruce, how close to your computer are you?
I'm right in front of it.
Type in 26 USC 7203.
I'm assuming you mean search for that.
Yeah, just do a search. Yeah, like any one of the search engines. 26 USC 7203.
26
USC 7203. Yeah, okay. 26 USC 7203. In fact, everybody, please do this. Go right along with Bruce.
What comes up, it says 26 USC 7203, statute of limitations, criminal tax manual is the next one that comes up.
Do you see the
willful failure to file return?
Yeah, you see the Cornell law.
Yes, that's the first. That's the first one that comes up.
Okay, click on it. And then after you've clicked on it,
willful
read
failure
the first
to file returns, supply information, or pay tax.
You know, read the first three words, just the first three words.
Any person required.
So, whoa, wait a minute. That means that not everybody is required. Imagine
right.
That. Hey, there
go
you
figure.
Go. Go figure, huh? Oh, shucks, ma. Holy kitty litter, Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we're not pulling this off of somebody's website. This is
Cornell Law School.
Yeah, Cornell Law School. Yeah. This isn't some Republic of Texas tax protester website. Okay. Now, Bruce, there's a path by with which we walk people through, and the path normally takes between a minimum of about 12 months, but 18 to 24 months. And what we do is we go through a process where with which we document this little note here, the any person required, and we take by using the IRS code and as I mentioned earlier on the call, and you may or may not have been on for it, but Michael and I believe in clean hands doctrine, meaning that we never let you, never allow you, don't, not no way, not no how, not today, not tomorrow, not our children's cell that we gave at the office. We're not going to get our hands dirty. It's better to pay extra on your withholdings. And, I always, for many years, I always had extra withheld, you know, because I was one of those people that was, may have been, promoting and helping other people, prove up their status with the IRS.
Right.
And so that I wouldn't risk being a liability to them. And this was especially before I got married. And my wife and I didn't meet till we were in our 30s, you know. And so we got married a little bit late in life. But what happened was that I made absolutely certain that I did not color outside the lines or risk being a threat of prosecution the whole time while I was helping people like that. And to that end, hold on a second, I have a problem here.
Go ahead.
But to that end, Bruce, Michael and I, and here at Americans Restoring America, we believe in having a full clean hands policy. And what we do is that while you're working on getting your documentation, we don't color outside the lines. Quite the opposite. We may even have a little extra withheld, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, so you end up,
So during the process, you're not raising any red flags.
Exactly. You know, and at the end of the year, you may get a little bit more back on your income tax return, and you may still file income. But it keeps.
Yeah. I came through three years of audit for stupid reasons. What we usually file our own. My wife is a paralegal for almost 40 years. That does trust and estate tax returns at a big firm. And so she is super conservative. We always overpay. I, for decades, always had my own companies, always, did everything I could do to not pay, which was all kinds of expenses, sometimes not documented. And then they started catching up with us on the not documented mileage and meals and stuff like that. And we got nailed a few years ago. And then they started nailing us every year. Now, this was during Hussein's regime. And I'm certain they saw some of my social media posts because I was very vocal and decided that we needed to be punished. And so they hammered us with every little thing and refused a number of years of legitimate business expenses. And even there was a billion-dollar company that was a multi-level company and health products that we were a part of, made some money, but had mostly years that we lost money because it takes time to build. Well, they said that's not a real business and just disallowed anything from that company who's a billion-dollar company, and that company made many millionaires, not us. It didn't work for us, but, you know, they just refused to agree that, that those were legitimate business expenses, and we're like, we hired a guy that was 900 bucks. We hired a guy from her firm who was 900 bucks an hour. Now, he didn't charge us because they were longtime friends, and said, well, here's what you got to do to get out of trouble, which is basically kiss their ass. And I'm like, I was so frustrated because I didn't know you guys yet. And so we paid a bunch more money that, you know, probably would have been, you know, $10,000 more than what we really owed, which, you know, it's not a lot in the grand scheme of things. But the last couple of years, I've just been a regular W-2 employee at a company, and I haven't screwed with it, but because I felt like there was no way I could fight back. And now, especially with what you're saying tonight, I'm like, thank you. I'm not going to take this crap anymore.
Well, Bruce, we also, we don't, I don't really subscribe to telling people anything. Asking thought-provoking questions is what I prefer, you know, especially when you're in court, you know, asking, Your Honor, that's a good question. May I ask a question in response to that? You know, and that's the way we get things done. And my favorite example is that, you know, the Second Amendment thing. And here in Texas, I've been a proponent for over 30 years. And if you go back to 30 years ago to the Republican Senatorial Convention in San Antonio, you'll find out that I handed out 13,000 business cards that on one side it says, object, Your Honor, where in the Constitution does it exclude my right to keep bear a firearm in that place, let alone your courtroom? And on the flip side, it had 18 U.S.C. 242 and 241 on it, and 42 U.S.C. 1983, you know, deprivation of rights under color of law.
Do you have any of those cards left?
I'm preparing to print a bunch more.
I love that.
Oh, there was a... we were in 96 and 2000. I was in the Rules Committee at the Republican Senatorial Convention, and both times David Dewhurst sat right next to me on one side. And on the other side, one of them, I had Sheriff Tommy Thomas from Harris County sitting on the other side of me, you know. At the 2000, my six-year-old son.
Years ago, I met both of them once, but it was in passing. It was not a political event. It was at the Houston Rodeo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They both show up for that all the time.
Oh, yeah. So, anyway, I'm sorry.
Tommy Thomas, he says, John, I need some more of those cards, you know, and I says, how many? He says, you got 100 of them? And I says, I got 4 boxes of 500 right here. And he says, can I have all 4? And David Dewhurst says, he looks at me, he says, you're the one handing out those cards? And I says, who wants to know? And I didn't know who David Dewhurst was at the 94, you know, I hadn't actually met him yet, you know, and he introduced himself, and you know, and he says, I got to give you a T-shirt. And I says, well, he says, how many, can I have 3 or 4 boxes of those also? And I said to my John Arthur, I says, John Arthur, here's the key. I says, can we get some more? He says, I have to go to the hotel room, Dad. And he took the room key and trotted off. And he was gone about 10, 15 minutes, and David Dewhurst says, where'd your son go? He says, well, to the hotel room to get some more of those cards. And he goes, he says, well, where's your hotel? Oh, it's down the – he says, how old's your son? I says, well, 6. And He says, 6 years old, you know, and he came back and Tommy Thomas, you know, says, somebody bring me a chair. We need one more chair here, you know, in the Rules Committee. And John Arthur came in and he had 10 boxes of 500. And, you know, and they all got absorbed at the Rules Committee there. And I had a federal marshal call from Alameda County. I don't know if you're familiar with California much, but up where the shipyards are there, that he found out how to get a hold of me through a bunch of people, tracked me down, and said that he still had one of those cards from the 96 Republican Senatorial Convention. He had two of them that he gave away from the 2000 convention.
Wow.
And and that a lot of people still have those, but it's there's a lot of people that I appeared amicus curiae back in August for a Massachusetts hearing where a lady was rear-ended by a bus in the schoolyard in a crosswalk, and her trunk popped open, and the crossing guard, you know, and this is right in front of the intermediate school, you know, was it fifth or sixth grade to eighth grade kind of thing, and she saw a gun case with a manufacturer logo on it and automatically assumed that there was a pistol in it, called the cops, they threw her on the ground, everything else. They did not release her on bail, and the night before her hearing, they somehow one of the inmates had talked to somebody else that knew me, got my number. She used up one of her phone calls to call me, so I appeared the next day. I was on the call 14 minutes, and we finished up by, Your Honor, where in the Constitution is sued the right to keep bear firearm in that schoolroom, school, let alone your court? And I said, and would this honorable court consider it a deprivation of rights under color of law under 18 U.S.C. 242 or conspiracy under 241 to continue to prosecute this? And should we advise it? Do we need to advise a federal marshal of these proceedings? And could I get a copy of the court reporter's transcripts? And bottom line was, their charges were summarily dismissed. All three, they had three grand jury indictments, felony grand jury indictments against her. I never met her till the night before and the next day, and I haven't talked to her since. Asking questions, you know, Your Honor, may I ask the court a question? Can you, If under the Declaration of Independence it says among these are the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, but all those automatic, that means that it's rights from a larger pool of those three are from a larger enumeration of rights. Now, that automatically implies that they have the right to earn a living because that's required to be able to have life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. If you can tax a right to the place where you take the proceeds from the individual, or if they don't pay that tax, that you take away their liberty, then is that right truly a right? Or is the tax being wrongfully administrated? And we've already had a handful of cases that where they had already made their name, had already made the bathroom wall, where they got dismissed.
Awesome.
There may be a teeny bit more to the pleadings than just that, but you know, like I said, this memorandum in support of the this one right here is almost 200 pages in itself, and between the motion and the memorandum in support, well, the exhibits for the memorandum are in excess of 200 alone. The motion is only 4 pages long.
Wow.
You know, but see, that's the way you do that. But
well, as long as the judge doesn't claim to not understand English, you're okay. It works.
Yeah, lead my rips. You know, understand good English. You, hey, okie dokie, number one USGI Joe, belly fart smellow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so much for the bad humor. But,
all right.
Bruce, if you would really like to pursue that path, check with Michael.
Okay.
And,
it seems to have gone away, and we've been fighting for a year. Because they owe us $18, and my wife is a feisty little thing, and think of the chihuahua that won't let go of the pit bull's leg.
Think of the Saint Bernard who's quietly stepping on your foot with his
right
paw and won't let you go, won't lift his foot up while he's slobbering you to death.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
What now? You know, she doesn't want to fight anything. She deals with the IRS every day. She's in a position of placating, and what can I do for my client? That she's a paralegal, so she's, you know, the attorney says, "Hey, call the IRS and do this or find out this." So she's on the phone with them every day. And she always tells me, when I get all frustrated and upset with them, she goes, look, remember, you're dealing with people that barely have a kindergarten education. And I said,
that's a sad part of the reality.
It's the sad truth. And I said,
it is.
So you can't get mad at them. You just have to be nice to them and figure out what it is they're looking at that they can't get past and try to get them past that. And that's what her older attorney friend, who's since retired last year, he was an IRS attorney for 20 years and then worked for this big firm for another 30 years or so and retired in his, I want to say, late 70s, early 80s. But that was pretty much his approach. And for the last several years of his career, he's making $900 an hour helping people, you know, get the IRS to back off. But they're not in the business of getting people into the status of never having to file again. They don't, law firms don't do that. It's not how they make money, because once you're done, you're done.
Well, and the flip side is that most of the people that have done that in the past have tied on a little ration of attitude, bad attitude, to their efforts, and they've been more tax processors. So the issue is that the threat is looming of reprisal, and that's one of the reasons why Michael and I and all the other information providers here at ARA always absolutely have clean hands, no matter what.
And that is different from everybody else. And I have in the past, years ago, subscribed to every tax protester thing there was to say, look, it's not legal, blah, blah, blah. But yet all those people end up getting in trouble and going to jail or having to pay or having their funds absconded with. And your group has been the first one to say, well, here's how we do it. And especially in your case, with asking the right questions of the judge, and then it's kind of like, well, so whatever they say, and if it's what you want them to say, then you're leading them into giving the right answer to that question. So, A, you don't have to have the marshal arrest the judge right there, which every once in a while I think would be wonderful. If you know anything about Dallas, there's a judge, Clay Jenkins, that needs to have some marshal throw him down and put him in cuffs. He's a total piece of crap. But that's another story.
Sounds like you're familiar also with Judge Hidalgo, Lena Hidalgo down here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, she's another overly thoughtful citizen. That can,
I spent a lot of time in Houston and have a lot of friends down there. You may know of a radio guy. What the heck's his name? It's on 740 every morning.
You know, my son used to be a daytime talk show host down here. And you know what? But I don't listen to radio. In fact, I don't even watch TV. We haven't had a TV antenna hooked up since November of 1977.
I'm trying to go that way. We don't pay for any TV. We have a couple of internet channels that my wife watches, and that's about it. TV is such crap. And, well, it's been crap. Well, if you know anything about the media, it's owned by a handful of companies, and they're feeding you. It's all MK Ultra, feeding you what they want you to think.
Yeah, I understood. Well,
anyway,
Bruce,
sorry,
I've
taken up way too much of your time. I appreciate it.
I would love to continue to chat with you. I'm starting to lose my voice.
Okay.
Is there anything else that
lemon,
I can
honey and lemon and tea.
Sick'em doggy.
Yeah.
Thank you so very much.
Thank you so very much,
Bruce.
Thank you, John.
All right. Yeah. Next is Jennifer Sue. Next is Jennifer Sue. Before I bring her on, I just have a quick question. I know
Do
I shouldn't ask
Jennifer
a question.
Jennifer Sue's in line?
No, just one.
You said next is Jennifer Sue.
Sue.
Then you said next is Jennifer Sue.
Do I stutter? Next is, no, I should ask a question that you don't already know the answer to, but I'm going to risk it anyways. John, what do you know about the Sovereign Immunities Act? The Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act.
Okay. that one's gonna take a little bit of a background on that.
Well, let me just ask you real quickly. You are familiar with it then?
I have some background on it, shall we say.
Okay, that's all I wanted to find out. We're going to go on next to Jennifer Sue here. Go ahead, Miss. Oh,
yeah.
Got to unmute you.
Okay.
Go ahead, Miss Jennifer Sue.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hey. Good. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome. I'm glad you're doing well. I was foolishly went to file for record one of my deeds, and I took about 100 pages of information that was proving an mandatory exception to having to file any tax papers at all for land, and I had the deed. Well, they kept the original deed and said they'd give it back after it's gone through the process. And they gave me photocopied copy of the deed with a receipt, and then they said they weren't going to return the 100 pages. And I didn't take any other pages and get them stamped. So my question is, should I go back tomorrow and get them to stamp the, you know, four copies of the pages that I gave them, or is it too late, or what?
Okay, Jennifer, normal procedure is that when you go to the Hall of Records or Recorder of Deeds, is that you supply them with a deed and the fee, And if you ask for it, they'll give you a copy. Some of you have a courtesy copy while they're in process of recording your original deed. Your original deed will be tendered back to you, providing you gave them an address to mail it to and you paid the fee. Okay. When you supply ancillary documentation, it needs to be in the form of a supplement to the deed so that they understand that it explains the deed. It used to be up until about 12 years ago that in regards to the jurisdiction you went into, you could just about record anything at the county clerk's office. In fact, there were times where I recorded just unbelievable stuff. And one thing I always did was, which shocked a lot of people, and sometimes I had to tie it to an APN, an assessor's parcel number, was the birth records, affidavit of live birth. We don't do birth certificates. The reason you have a birth certificate is so that a child during litigation, that the state can administrate who actually owns that asset. Birth certificates and marriage licenses were a function of when it came to the place where property of one individual was joined to the property of another individual, i.e. or farm and full recognition to slaves. But what happened was is that the marriage license required that those individuals be licensed. And because marriage was otherwise forbidden between slaves from two separate plantations, but the state got its cut. And that's why when you have a marriage license, the state can take a third of the assets of the drain probate. And that's why CPS, Child Protective Services, has jurisdiction over children that the parents have a marriage license and a birth certificate. Before the 1840s, marriages, births, deaths were all recorded in one place, the family Bible, with two witnesses. Okay. A license is permission to do something that's otherwise illegal. You're saying I can't get married if I don't have that license, Your Honor? Tough tortillas, I'm sorry. We're already married. But I used to record when there was a birth there, and we used to help individuals without birth certificates get U.S. passports. And I used to work with the families and get the children's passport literally right after they were born, literally at the earliest, within 10 to 12 months, get the passport. So we start them out with documentation that doesn't have a socialist insecurity number attached to it. But now what happens is that they're getting a little bit more precise and they're wanting anything to do with an assessor's parcel number. If you've turned in 100 pages of documentation, it has to be associated with a specific tract number or assessor's parcel number. And I say tract number or assessor's parcel number, those are depending on what state of the union you happen to be domiciled in. It depends on what terminology that they use, okay? But you were recording that to go with the deed, correct?
Yep.
Okay, what was that documentation that went with it, that 100 pages?
Oh, it was information that I gathered over the last couple of years from the IRS, the Bernie, from, my status as a political status, the United Nations, New York State tax, property tax law, like a whole bunch of things that from every place you could imagine,
okay.
Basically saying, legally I'm a mandatory non-taxpayer, basically, on all these levels.
Right. Okay. Which
Well, and the trust and the trust and the corporation soul, they're the owners and the trustee, and so for that as well.
Right. Okay. Okay. Okay, that's good that you that type of documentation. Okay. I'm glad to hear that. It now there are certain cases where certain trust documents you don't necessarily want filed, or they need to be kept confidential. But
they didn't actually file any of that paperwork, right? They didn't. They only filed the deed.
Now, did you surrender or relinquish any critical originals to them?
Only the original deed. Everything else was a copy.
Okay, good. Okay.
And they said that actually when she handed me the photocopy of the deed she made with her receipt on it, she said, "This is your real deed now. The other one is nothing." Even though the other one is the original deed. But still, I have to go back and pick it up. I have to call in 4 weeks and see if it's ready for me to pick up.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Gino, rephrase your question for me, Keith, that you were asking about this now.
Do I need to take that 100 pages of backup information of I'm an exception to the land tax rule? Do I need to go and get that recorded or not? You know, or was it okay?
Did you already ask them to record it?
No, they didn't record it. They only recorded the deed, but they said they'd send all that paperwork with the deed to wherever it's going. I sort of assumed it was like the exemption application that they gave me to fill out. It was basically in place of that, so it wasn't something that needed to be recorded. But then after I came home, I thought, well, maybe I should have recorded it.
Yes. Give a call on Thursday, and let's talk about each and every individual document, and we'll talk about what needs to be filed and what shouldn't be filed. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Schedule an appointment with Michael for Thursday morning sometime. Okay.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, and let's go over the specifics from there. Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Do you have any other questions, young lady?
Just the chase. Is that nearly ready or not? Sounds like you've been overly busy.
I'll see if we can have that ready for Thursday also.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks very much.
Take care.
All righty. Thank you so very much. Now, I've got something to share with the group that I think you're all going to find very interesting. So we have an eclipse that's coming very soon. And those of you that are students of the scriptures know that with particularity, an eclipse was the sign from the Almighty One that gave Nineveh or advised Nineveh of its impending judgment. Just as an FYI, the path of this coming April 8th, the U.S. eclipse that passes directly over these towns. In its path is Nineveh, Texas, Nineveh, Missouri, Nineveh, Indiana. This will be the highest magnitude of the eclipse. The local time predicted to be 7 minutes after 3 in the afternoon. Nineveh, Ohio, Nineveh, Pennsylvania, Nineveh, Virginia, Nineveh, New York, and Nineveh, Nova Scotia.
All right. What a hit parade.
Anybody remember what Jerusalem was called before it was Jerusalem? Salem. It was called Salem. Salem. In August 21st, 2017, we had a full eclipse. And it traversed Salem, South Carolina, Salem, Kentucky, Salem, Missouri, Salem, Nebraska, Salem, Wyoming, Salem, Idaho, and Salem, Oregon. If you transpose the two paths, they form a cross. Actually, an X, more of an X. Like we're going to X out the United States. Just remember that. Just remember that. Just sharing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we have anybody else, Michael?
No, sir. No one else has pressed star 2 on their keypad. Elmer came in real late, so he'll probably be asking me for a recording, and I'll just go ahead and get it ready and send to him. Anyone else press star 2 on your keypad to raise your hand? Press star 2. Otherwise, we're going to say nighty night. Brent, this is your buddy Brent, Brother John.
From Arizona.
Yep. Prescott, Arizona.
Hey, good evening.
Brent from Arizona. How you doing, brother?
I am as finer than frog's hair.
Split four wine.
Boy. By the way, I wanted to thank you again for your input on the corporation, on the New Mexico Corporation. Thank you. I'll just tender it at that. Yeah. How may we be an asset or a blessing for you, brother?
Well, Michael, if you could send me a recording of this call, I tuned in late, and it sounds like it's really important, having to do with tax information. And
sure.
My question is, there was talk, I think it was a year ago at UN, of getting a general kind of submission thing that you could send in to the IRS. And then we were also talking for about a year about, John, you've been so busy. But I don't know if you're taking on individual situations to help with the IRS situation.
Presently, Brent, it normally takes we had thought about just providing packets that individuals could do, like the self-help, and we found out that right now that people are getting themselves into trouble, and here's the difficulty. When someone that's unskillful takes something in the sword and wields it unskillfully, what happens is that the and they don't carry through. They don't know that they have to carry through on everything. What happens is the strength of what we did have and the judgments we do have dilutes, and it makes it very hard to be successful to help anybody else. So what's happening is that the preparing a brief and a self-help thing, we're not doing that. In fact, there are some individuals that may have gotten a little cocky and a little arrogant and says, no, look, you guys, this is what it is, and you don't know what you're talking about, and et cetera. And they've got themselves remanded to custody. And we are now guarding very jealously the packages. I say guarding the packages. Like tonight, we shared some of the most critical specifics, so that the person that is up to it and intuitive, that they'll they could pick up on it and proceed. A person that has the skill set and the background to know what we explained tonight will also be somebody that's not going to get themselves into trouble. So right now, depending on what a person's skill set background is, you know, that's the way we're handling that. You're right, my workload is very heavy right now, and I'm limiting very carefully right now. I'm only willing to take on two additional students right now. That's it. And unless it's a special case, but for the most part, I'm refraining from taking on any more, unless we have somebody that is I know is very optimistic that I can help them. And the tax thing is one of the that's one of the things that that I would definitely consider taking on one or two students on right now.
Okay. Well, as you probably know, I went through the various processes, including revocation of election and the whole W-8-B-E-M thing and, you know, correcting the status and on and on and on. And I have not filed because I'd be perjuring myself if I did. And I haven't heard anything, but it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, there's right now, as we talked about earlier in the call, where Michael and I are, while we will, you know, if we have somebody, and I'm trying to set one place aside for students where I'm just waiting to see if any of our regulars, hoping they never do, but end up with a crisis management situation where they may have done something that they could have or shouldn't have done, and now they're getting fan mail, you know, and or an invitation to discuss their performance for a bench. I'm trying to set aside one slot for that. If we have two people that have been maintaining clean hands or they're not currently in trouble or fighting an uphill battle, those are ones that I would take on right now because those, usually we can do a soup to nuts on those and within 24 months have them off the tax rolls. So, you know, that's, but it's, as we talked about earlier, clean hands, and this is all strictly by the code. You know, it's strictly by the book so that when we get done, like this one gentleman that's filing in the morning, his hands are clean. And, well, actually, he did have an issue that was potentially going to collections that that's been a little bit entangled in the situation, but we're working on filing with him and for him so that by the time he's got this done, that there will either be a court order or a letter saying, yes, we agree, you're not required to file a 1040.
Okay. Yeah, my situation, I'm clean except for the fact that I haven't filed in a couple of years.
Yeah. There's a couple of other folks out in your jurisdiction that we're working on also that we're in the middle of the process with that we're going to take to the next step in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And actually, strange as it sounds, the longer this process takes, the better it is, and the better the documentation and the stronger case is to have a court order that says you're never going to have to file a 1040 again. So, you know, so if something takes 2 years to handle, that's not a bad thing. I did have one couple in Oregon that took 4.5 years. They went all three levels, but when we filed the suit, it was all but a slam dunk. Now, I say all but a slam dunk, but it took almost 3.5 years for the suit to be heard because the Treasury Department kept making motions for continuances. And then eventually a federal prosecutor got involved, and when she got involved, she started filing continuances also. But there were actually only three actual court appearances where everybody was in court. And when it was all said and done, the couple, I only appeared remotely at one of those. The couple, they managed to do everything on their own. You know, so there's another young gentleman out in your neighborhood that we're working on getting him so that he hopefully can appear on his own. But in the midst of that, we've got as soon as we get one more transcript, we're going to file against the bench and the officers that made the arrest in his case. And we're holding off on filing against the prosecutor, but this young gentleman said that he was willing to file a criminal, which is a little bit harder to do, a lot harder to do, but it's going to send a big message, and I'm very proud of that young man's temerity of character and his willingness to go that length. We'll probably also file a 42 U.S.C. 1983 complaint with him so that maybe he'll have an income opportunity out of one of them, if you catch my meaning.
Yeah, yeah.
But I should introduce you to him sometime. He's not far from you.
Cheeky.
Yeah, you got any other questions, my other brother?
No, that's it.
Okay. The Most High King's blessings be upon you. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all for joining us this evening. Tomorrow night, I will be sitting in for Mr. Slevin. We will be discussing the limited liability company. We'll be discussing how the January 1st supposedly debacle has turned out to be something that is a paper tiger. And we have the solution, actually, thanks to the gentleman that was just asking questions to Brother John. So we'll talk about that tomorrow night. Brother John, any comments that you'd like to make in closing?
Thank you very much, my fellow person, for your willingness and temerity of character to step up to help restore liberty to America. It's an honor and a privilege to serve beside you. Thank you for allowing me to serve with you. The Most High King's blessings be upon you.
All right.
Good evening.
Thank you so very much. I want to thank everybody. See you tomorrow night. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you.